because we each interact with the natural world in a different way. Some of us may be very much into the scientific way of learning how nature works. Some of us may be more into the artistic way of creating art in nature, or maybe it's a social justice aspect that attracts us to nature. Maybe it's emotional or spiritual connection, or just creativity.
That's Andres Edwards, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. Andres Edwards is an educator, award-winning author, media designer, and sustainability consultant. He's the founder and president of EduTrax, a firm specializing in developing education programs and consulting services on sustainable practices for green building and business initiatives. He joins us to talk about his latest book, Renewal: How Nature Awakens Our Creativity, Compassion, and Joy. Andres, welcome to the program.
Great to be here.
Give us an overview of this book. What will readers find here?
Well, I cover a whole slew of topics in this book. I start with different doorways into nature, different ways that we get attracted to nature. Maybe it's a scientific way because we're curious how nature works. Maybe it's a social justice issue. Maybe it's recreation. Then I talk about the impact of awe and beauty in nature, and I give examples of that. I also talk about health and well-being is a big part of it in terms of what are the impacts of us spending time in nature. You know, it makes us happier, reduces our stress, makes us more creative, all these kinds of things. Then I talk about how we use nature as our own mentor and provider, which means how do we learn from nature? How does nature help us answer some questions? How can we design our homes and our systems and our energy systems and food systems to be more aligned with nature? I also give examples of nature's intelligence in terms of particular species and what they do. And I talk about the creativity aspect and how nature can become part of our lives and how can we coexist in more of a balanced state with the natural world. And then I talk about an ecocentric ethic, which is a way that we can not just take from nature, but also give back. So it's an aspect of the reciprocity of being with nature. So it's, as you can say, it's quite wide ranging.
And we won't have time to cover all of that, but I do want to touch upon some of those points here. And right from the introduction of the book, you talk about the importance of forging an emotional bond with nature. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, I wanted to, you know, I go back to my own childhood and many other people and say, you know, when we first had that experience in nature that stayed with us, it was almost like an emotional connection to whether it was, you know, fishing or whether it was rowing in a lake or swimming or taking a walk in the woods. That kind of connection stays with us and it has a whole much greater impact than just learning about the facts and figures and the concepts of nature. And I recall a quote that I'll paraphrase from Rachel Carson, which talks about as a parent to a child, how it's much more important to engender the feeling of being in nature rather than the facts and the wisdom and the knowledge that comes, because the feelings that we have towards nature stay with us for life and they're the seedbed for then us attaining the knowledge and the wisdom that comes later. But without that, we're just, you know, it doesn't have that draw and that connection to us. So establishing that feeling, that emotional connection to nature, makes us care about it and it takes us further and becomes part of our lives.
Now, as you mentioned, part of what you write about in the book is aligning with nature. Tell us a bit more what you mean by that and why it's so important.
Well, it's, you know, from a conceptual level, we can think of humans as one of many, many, many species on the earth. So part of aligning with nature is to saying, what is our role? You know, if we want to see ourselves as stewards, for example, then what is our role as stewards of the earth in terms of how do we, what kinds of actions will be more conducive to creating a balance and harmony with all of the other species and with the systems that keep us alive? Because essentially, we are dependent on these ecosystems to stay alive, to have the clean water, the air, to provide the healthy soils that we can grow our food in. So it's very, very essential that we have a connection and an understanding of what our role is so we can align with it. And then another form, a way of looking at alignment is to say, when we are in nature, what helps us get in the flow of alignment with our habitat or with whatever environment we're in? I talk a lot about what happens to us when we are in nature, why we have this almost built-in affinity towards nature, which goes back to biophilia, which is a theory that says way back from our ancestors, we had this connection to the natural world. And so how do we build on that? That creates an alignment with it. Neuroscientists are now looking at other theories to say, somehow when we're in, you know, when we're working on something very, very challenging, like a math problem or a mechanical problem, our brains have very directed attention. And it can be draining, it can fatigue us. But somehow when we're in nature, we have this undirected attention where we're much more relaxed. We're able to relax the frontal lobe. We're able to just see the patterns, the colors in nature. And that calms us down. And that's another form of aligning with the natural world.
And you also write in the book that in addition to aligning that you've talked about, there's so many lessons we can take from nature. And you discuss them in the book by incorporating nature into our design. So tell us a little bit about biomimicry and biophilic design.
Yeah, biomimicry is a really interesting science that looks at how do we design our systems so that they mimic natural systems. You know, in some ways, we're the new kids in the block. We've been around a lot less than a lot of many other species in the earth. So how can we look towards nature to see how we can design our own systems to be more efficient and less harmful to the environment? So I talk about whale fins, for example, and how the whales have these bumps on the leading edge of their fins that makes them glide much more efficiently. And now designers are starting to incorporate that into wind turbines and other fans so that the fans are up to a third more efficient. And they're much more efficient and even low for wind turbines, much more efficient in low wind conditions. So that's some examples. If we look at the gecko, for example, is another example where the gecko has this remarkable ability to be able to climb a vertical surface because it has these hair fibers that just create the suction, and he's able to scale up this thing. So then, again, engineers and scientists are looking at how can we design adhesive systems so that they can mimic that. For example, using them in things like carpet tiles or climbing equipment or medical adhesives that are much more efficient and less harmful in terms of the design and how we use them. So those are a couple of examples. Biophilic design is really fascinating because it looks at our built environment, which we spend, you know, 90% of our time is spent indoors. And so what can we do? How can we break the barrier between being indoors and the outside? And so there's certain things that we know that when we do, we are more creative, we are more efficient, we are healthier. Things like natural sunlight. If we're able to create buildings or even in our homes where we have more natural sunlight, we tend to feel better. We know that in schools, when there's natural sunlight, the students perform better in standardized tests. So that's one example. Water features is another one. Just having water features inside a building, maybe a small waterfall or a water fountain or something like that, will just create that feeling like we're out in nature. Even the sound of water helps us. Having plants, indoor plants, really, really helps us as well. These are things that we know that increase our creativity, increase our productivity. And so architects and designers are looking at that and seeing how they can begin to incorporate that into the workplace and into the homes.
I want to come back to something you mentioned earlier, and that was the idea of an ecological ethic and why nurturing that helps support a reciprocal relationship with nature. Tell us more about that.
Well, I talk about an ecocentric ethic because, you know, when I looked at all the sort of the benefits that we get from nature, it's a way of saying what we take from nature, which is great for our own benefits. But the ecocentric ethic looks at what do we give back? So it's not just taking, but giving back. And I discussed the way of honoring life and having a reference for life, a reverence rather for life. And so I talk about the ABCs of honoring life on Earth, that being more aware, having a sense of belonging, and having a sense of caring. And this is really a way of understanding our role in the web of life. And so if we can become more aware of our interdependence with nature, what I talked about earlier, how we depend on these ecological systems, the ecosystem services that they're often called, things like pollination, things like clean water, clean air, these are the things that keep us alive. And, you know, scientists have tried to put a dollar value on that, and it's in the
billions of dollars, trillions of dollars, actually. And it's never really accounted for in our economic systems. It's just there. So how do we begin to understand our interdependence with nature? And then how do we begin to align with living systems so that we feel that we're part of it? And so when we do that, we create a reciprocal relationship where we feel like we take and we give back. And some of the ways of giving back are, for example, in terms of renewable energy. Well, we make sure that the energy is not depleting the earth, but also maybe providing an abundance of energy for the community. Or if there's a system that's been damaged, we regenerate it to the point where it is more biodiverse than it was beforehand. So these are ways that we can enhance the systems that keep us alive and that make the world a healthy place for us and for other species.
Another thing I wanted to mention was just how this book is structured, because you begin each chapter with a series of quotes that relate to the chapter, and then you end the chapter with questions and activities to help readers absorb and sort of expand on the ideas that you've presented. Tell us a bit more about that as well.
Yeah, the quotes, you know, I just come across a lot of quotes in my work and in my life, and I always sort of keep a list of quotes that I find inspiring, and then when it came time to write this book, I realized, you know, there's certain quotes that really speak to the topics that I'm going to be talking about in each chapter. So I included them at the beginning of the chapter as a way of setting the tone and sort of the feelings and the topics that I will be discussing. And then, you know, there's a chapter, of course, a text within the chapter that discusses, for example, in chapter 2, we talk about awe and beauty. And then towards the end, I have questions and activities, and that I found as a really useful way for readers to be able to incorporate the material in the book and make it part of their own lives, because we each interact with the natural world in a different way. Some of us may be very much into the scientific way of learning how nature works. Some of us may be more into the artistic way of creating art in nature, or maybe it's a social justice aspect that attracts us to nature. Maybe it's emotional or spiritual connection or just creativity. So then at the end of the chapter, I give ideas. For example, in the awe chapter, you know, when was an experience where you experienced awe in nature and what did it feel like? So this, maybe you write it in your journal. And how do you integrate beauty into your world and into your life? Or how do you try and preserve beauty in your own backyard? So it's things to just jog ourselves, our memories to think, and our creativity to think, how can we begin to incorporate these ideas into our daily lives? And I find that useful for myself, and I thought it might be useful for others. And that's why I included that section at the end of each of the chapters.
The book is packed with information and thought-provoking ideas. And obviously, we didn't have time to talk about all of them in this brief interview. But if you had to sum it all up, is there a big takeaway for readers here?
I would just say, find your passion within nature. We know it's good for us in health-wise. And figure out what it is that is our passion and be a part of that, because, you know, we are dependent, we're interdependent with the natural world. If we find something that attracts us to it and we can give back and also get benefits from it, then let's do that. And this book was just a way of an avenue to discover that within each of us, to find out what is it for us in our own lives that we can create and manifest in the natural world.
Andres, thank you very much for talking with me today.
Great, Dan. Thanks. Great to be with you.
The book by Andres Edwards is Renewal: How Nature Awakens Our Creativity, Compassion, and Joy. You'll find more interviews on a wide variety of topics at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. You can use the KPR app to listen on your phone or tablet. You can sign up for the Conversations podcast on iTunes, and you'll also find us on Facebook. Conversations is a production of Kansas Public Radio. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.